Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is Nick Wrighton for Colin Cowherd on the Herd. About 4 minutes from now, if you want to set your clock, I'll tell you the three people in America who have to be filled with the most regret this morning. But right now, as Tom Brady is sitting on his throne with his 7 rings surrounding him, well, 6 rings and a 7th in the process of being made, there's going to be a lot of discussions about GOATs and legacies and the all-time NFL pantheon. And if there is such a thing as greatest football player ever, Tom Brady obviously sits atop that mountain. That's with respect to Jerry Rice, with respect to Jim Brown, with respect to Lawrence Taylor and Deion Sanders and Reggie White, whomever you want to call out there as possibilities. If there is such a thing as best football player ever, it's Brady. We all know the greatest quarterback ever is Brady. Even myself, who's picked against Brady repeatedly over the last few years, has never denied that he is the quarterbacking GOAT. Now, there was a question, could Patrick Mahomes catch him? Could he, with a win this weekend, be closer on his heels than the biggest Brady defenders would want to admit? But that's now a moot point, because now the gap between Mahomes and Brady is like the gap between Bob Beamon and everyone else after the 68 Olympics. It's not that it can't ever be closed, but when you break a record by 2 feet like Beamon did, you just say, okay, it's not going to be closed for years and years and years. Can Mahomes or someone else eventually become the greatest quarterback ever? Yes. Are they anywhere close to doing it right now? No. And 7-1, even if you don't subscribe to what Tony Romo said yesterday, which was essentially announce that Mahomes now has to win 8 Super Bowls to be the best quarterback ever, I don't believe that. I don't think it just should be a count the rings culture. He has a ways to go. But even if he had won, he would have had a ways to go. So that, to me, is not the most interesting conversation. The most interesting conversation when it comes to legacies is when we expand past just the NFL and we talk about the room Tom Brady joined, which previously only had one person in it. And that room is, I am the system. I am the winning. I am the culture. Because as great as Michael Jordan was, never won outside of that Phil Jackson system and the Chicago Bulls. Had opportunities, had 5 years of his career before Phil got there, had those 2 Wizards years when they missed the playoffs. Now, we don't hold those against him, and I'm not shading MJ, but we can't say definitively he could have won outside, or he would have won outside of that system, that coach, that organization. Joe Montana left the Niners. Had success with my Chiefs, but the success had a ceiling to it. It was the AFC Championship game one time. Brett Favre left, and we saw him go to the Jets. It was okay, 7-5, and then they fell off. Go to the Vikings, make an NFC Championship, almost win a league MVP, but that was as far as they got. Bill Russell won 11 titles in 13 years, the greatest champion ever, but we never saw him outside of the Boston Celtics. That's not his fault, but it's just the reality. Prior to this year, there was only one athlete ever, when we talk about GOATs, who you could say, they are the system. They are the culture. They are the winning. And you know what? If you let them play a little general manager, they'll help you there too. You let them play a little coach, they'll help you there as well. And that one athlete is, of course, LeBron. He was in a room by himself like that. Brady's now in there with him. Because Brady went to the losingest organization in NFL history, and they immediately won a title. Brady brought in Gronk. Brady brought in AB. Brady brought in the culture. And much like LeBron, Brady's team that he was on, that was competing for championships with him, all of a sudden, instantly became an also-ran. And so, as great as Jordan was, he left the Bulls first time, and they kept the other pieces around him that he played with, and they won 54 games. And we didn't, and he went to the Wizards, and they missed the playoffs. As great as Montana was, he goes to a good Chiefs team, makes them a very good Chiefs team. They make the AFC Championship game, and that's it. As great as those guys were, their apex level of success did not transfer. It always has for LeBron. Does not, the Lakers, the losingest organization in the NBA over 6 years. He gets there. His first year, he has them in fourth place before he gets hurt. The next year, they win a title. The Cavs are a train wreck. He gets there. They're a perennial finals contender. He leaves. They're a train wreck again. He comes back. They make the finals every year. The Heat are an also-ran for a couple of years. He gets there. They make four straight finals. He leaves. They miss the playoffs. The Bucks haven't made a playoff game in a decade. Brady gets there. They win the Super Bowl. The Patriots make the playoffs every single year. He leaves. They win six games. There's two guys in that room. I am the culture. I am the championship. I am the system. It is LeBron James and Tom Brady. And that, in addition to ring number seven, is what Brady earned last night. Now, I said I'd tell you the three people in America today who should feel the worst. Number one is me. My team lost. My Brady takes look even worse than ever. I am, you know, am I financially solvent? It depends on who you ask. On the bright side, all that money's going to Fox Bet, and, you know, they're partners, so maybe they'll give me a rebate. Who knows? But I'm number one. Number two and three, I believe, are Bill Belichick and Kyle Shanahan. Because Tom Brady wanted to stay in New England. Now, folks can revisionist history this thing and say, oh, he put his house up for sale. Oh, he was ready to move on. He was only ready to move on when he went to them for a contract extension prior to the 2019 season and they refused to give it to him. And he said, really? You'll give me a raise and nothing else? That's the story here? You'll remove the ability for you to franchise tag me? Give me a fake extension that automatically voids. That is what salted the earth. I know folks like, oh, he put his house for sale. He put his house for sale because Bill Belichick was going to be early rather than late. And Bill Belichick, and this is what I always keep telling myself, Nick, those Brady takes weren't that bad. Bill Belichick agreed with you on them. He saw a deterioration in skill set. And he said, I can't commit to this guy into his mid-40s. Despite the fact that what he had done starting right around age 40 was win a league, the greatest Super Bowl comeback in history in 16, win a league MVP in 17, and throw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl, go to another Super Bowl in 2018 and win. And even though that's what he had done, Belichick said, nope, NFL history, I know it, the cliff is coming. I'm not re-signing. I'm not giving you an extension. And so Belichick this morning has to be feeling some type of way. His boss wanted Brady back. The fans wanted Brady back. Belichick didn't. And by the way, I thought Belichick was right. So I'm not criticizing because I would have made the same decision. But he can't be feeling great when New England now sits there having no idea who their quarterback is. And Brady just went 4-0 in the playoffs, including three road playoff victories. The other person is Kyle Shanahan and or John Lynch, depending on who the final decision maker was. Because there is a lot of very credible reporting that Brady's first choice was the Niners. And why wouldn't it have been? They had just made the Super Bowl. He's from California. They have a great head coach. They have a great organization, an outstanding defense, a great tight end. Like a lot of, I know this year didn't look like that because they got killed by the injuries, but of course he would want to go to the Niners. And the Niners publicly flirted with him. They publicly talked about it. And they said, no, we're going to stick with Jimmy. And again, even though I'm not a huge Jimmy Garoppolo guy, I supported that decision. You're going to go with the guy 15 years older than your quarterback? You're going to go with the 43-year-old instead of the 28-year-old? Like, it made sense that they were sticking with Garoppolo. But there was something that made them uneasy, and it wasn't just the fourth quarter of last year's Super Bowl. And now where are the Niners? Quietly again opining about the future of their quarterback position, while Tom Brady took a team with a lot of similarities to the Niners to the Super Bowl and whooped the team that scored 21 straight on the Niners in last year's Super Bowl to win that game. So I'm in good company this morning amongst people that have to feel extra agita in their gut about what Tom Brady just accomplished. Because Bill Belichick has to be saying, really? Like, of all the guys that I should have said, I know what history says, but I'm going to bet on them instead of bet on history. I couldn't pull the trigger. I couldn't let myself do that with Tom. I should have known better. He was here for 20 years. I should have known better. And Kyle Shanahan, who I think deep down knew Jimmy Garoppolo is not the guy, but the courage of your convictions you would have needed to move off of Garoppolo coming off a Super Bowl appearance to go to, and at the time, 42-year-old Tom Brady coming off a first-round playoff exit, and it would have also been Shanahan essentially saying, I know better than Belichick. I don't blame him for not having that courage of his convictions, but from many reports, that was Brady's first choice. He settled on Tampa, and now they're all settling in as Super Bowl champions. So me, Belichick, and Kyle Shanahan, we all walk into a bar. One of them's got to pay, though, because I'm out of money. Mike Vick makes fun of me. That'll be fun. That's next. Nick Wright in for Colin on The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
New tracks, new teams, and a new champ. The 2021 NASCAR season starts in just 6 days with the Great American Race, the Daytona 500, Sunday, only on Fox.
Hey, guys, sometimes driving is great. That's like the Daytona 500, but sometimes it's not so great, like when it's pouring outside. Like when the snow is swirling, that's when you need the new Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades designed to repel water, snow, and ice. Get yours today only at Walmart. We're now joined by one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite athletes growing up, not to age him, even though we're around the same age, the incomparable Michael Vick. Michael Vick joins us now live on The Herd. Mike, I know you were conflicted last night. Because on one side of the ball, you've got your guy, Andy. And, you know, I've said this before, you have many accolades, but the greatest coaching intern in the history of the Kansas City Chiefs, one Michael Vick. And on the other side of the ball, you have the GOAT, Tom Brady, who you have been discussing on our show all year, saying I've been discounting him. So what was going through your head watching what I think for everyone was a pretty shocking Super Bowl?
You know, It was tough to watch in the beginning because once I seen that the Bucs came out and established that run game and the play action came off of it, I kind of knew that was going to be the formula for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I was a little worried, but, you know, was paying close attention to see if the Kansas City Chiefs would respond to that. I knew that was going to be the formula to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. And, you know, when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, it was just no energy out there. And I'm thinking back to, you know, kickoff, you know, showing the guys on the sideline, you know, the guys who are their most spirited guys didn't have the energy. Kelsey didn't have the energy. Tyreek Hill didn't have the energy. You know, Patrick tried to provide that spark, but it just wasn't there. Like, and you can see it. So I think this team just had was dealing with a lot. And obviously, maybe they felt like this was a road game for them and the Bucks was at home and comfortable because they didn't play up to their standard. They was very flat coming into this game, bro.
What more could Patrick Mahomes have done? I know he had a bad stat line. From my perspective, and my eyes are different than yours, it felt like he was almost, to use a poker term, drawing dead. Like there was he had no counterpunch available to him. When you're watching him out there, is there something Patrick Mahomes could have done differently? Maybe not to change the outcome, but at least to make it closer?
No, it wasn't too much he could do, Nick. He was very uncomfortable. The injury that he has, that whatever's hampering him right now, it's really something that needs to be taken care of. And I think because he's having surgery in the offseason, it shows the severity of this injury. But, you know, I'm watching him throw last night and seeing him trying to control his body in so many different ways to make throws and the way he's moved. This is not Patrick Mahomes. He's not healthy. He's not comfortable at all. The throws right there. He throws that shoulder, throws that ball back shoulder, you know, on that seven route that we just showed, that corner route. And I know his timing. I know the way he throw the football. I know, you know, what he brings in terms of arm strength. He's just not comfortable in the pocket, and it was evident last night. And having three offensive linemen out certainly didn't help.
It was also very evident last night that the Chiefs could not straight up block the Tampa Bay front, even though Tampa Bay was not blitzing. It was the fewest blitzes a Todd Bowles team has sent in 5 years. As a quarterback, how much does it start to get in your head when you feel like every snap, within 2 seconds, there's going to be someone right in your face?
It happens early. Early in the game, you feel that pressure and you instantly know that the timing is going to be disrupted. Like, you can almost hear it when the ball snap. Like, we feel it, but you can hear it. You can feel those guys all around you. And, you know, instinctively, you got to move. And we never seen Patrick move as much as we seen him yesterday, whether he was rolling or pushing up or trying to get away from guys. It was just the rest all day. But that was because of the three offensive linemen that was out. You know, you start to do that offensive line shuffle. At this point in the season, you know, it's no togetherness. It's no continuity. You know, they kind of all over the place. And in 2 weeks, won't cut it. So I think Patrick came into the game not confident. Yes, confident in his abilities, but not confident in the offensive line. How could you be when your three most important guys on the offense are out?
Before we get to the Bucs side of things, one more question on the Chiefs. You played for Andy. You love Andy. You know, I have immense affection for Andy. I was surprised they didn't seem to have a counterpunch. I was surprised that they went into the game seemingly with the game plan of, we're going to do what we do, and you're not going to stop us. Now, in their defense, that was my game plan. You heard me last week. Like, no, the Chiefs are going to do what they do. So I would have been of no use to them. But when you were watching it unfold, were you surprised the Chiefs didn't have a counterpunch there?
Yeah, I was very surprised. And I thought they would go to a solid run game. I thought that would be a big part of their offense last night. I thought Edwards-Helaire and, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if Le'Veon Bell is hurt. But, you know, his existence and his presence would have been felt last night if healthy or if he would have been able to play. And then I keep going back to the offensive line. You talking about running the football. I'm saying talking about running the football, but you can't run the football if you got guys in there who don't really know the scheme or understand how to block it or block different fronts. You know, it plays a big factor. So, you know, I think Andy understood that. He know he could only get away with so much last night. And he did the best he could. You know, this team was very wounded injury-wise. And it's just one of them years where, you know, the ball didn't bounce your way in terms of injuries. And you got to pick up and get ready for a strong 2021.
All right, now let's talk Tom Brady, one of your favorite topics. When Tom Brady walked off the field against the Titans last year, his final game as a Patriot, after they're playing in the first round for the first time in forever, they're losing in the first round for the first time in a decade, and it was pretty clear his time in New England was over. Did you think this was a realistic possibility?
Well, I thought about the scenarios and where Tom could end up. Never thought it would be in Tampa Bay, you know, and I watched him closely from afar, and, you know, I thought he started to take a beating. I personally thought that he wasn't moving around as well. I thought he finished the season last year the way he looked in the beginning of the year this year, and then somehow, some way, he just picked it up out of nowhere. And it was looking the same, so we was all starting to think, man, Brady a little washed up. Well, not washed up, but he's, you know, he's regressing. You know, I never use the word washed up in terms of the GOAT. But, you know, we thought he was regressing a little bit, and, you know, Brady found a way to assemble a team around him and put it together. And I think, you know, more than anything, you know, his knowledge of the game really played a factor, along with Brian Leftwich and Bruce Arians, three offensive minds coming together. I think we talked about this over the summer when you know, I first appeared on First Things First. And, you know, it's just clearly evident that this man is a football savant. He knows a lot about the game of football. And my son will be attending Tom Brady camp one day. Hopefully he'll have some in the future.
Well, so let's talk about Brady and the other element to it, which is Tom Brady played for the first time in his career a little GM here. He brings Gronk in. Bruce Arians was adamant on the record against Antonio Brown. Then they sign Antonio Brown. He moves in with Brady. We saw this offseason in the draft, we saw the Chiefs called up Patrick Mahomes before the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick. We now see Deshaun Watson, one of the reasons he wants out of Houston, reportedly, among other reasons, but is they're not consulting him on the moves. With the success Brady instantly had when they allowed him to have a real say in some of these maneuvers, do you think we could potentially be entering a time where the star player, most notably the quarterback, has a seat at the decision-making table with the power brokers of the franchise? Or is this just singular to Tom Brady?
No, I don't think so. I think this is something that could reverberate around the league. You know, look at guys like Deshaun Watson, who was just recently trying to do the same thing. You know, we, as quarterbacks and you know, most players on the offense and defense side of the ball, know what pieces need to be put in place. And sometimes we have to crowd for that. We have to go to ownership. We got to go to management and say, look, I need this piece right here. You know, and when I use the word football savant, that's just not understanding what's going on the field, the X's and O's. It's knowing who need to be put in what place. You know, what offensive guard needs to be inserted into this spot, or, you know, what receiver needs to be put at X and what receiver needs to be put in the slot. You know, who works best where. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration because, you know, as quarterbacks, when the ball is snapped, we see everything that's going on. And even when we hand off to the running backs, we see everything that's taking place in terms of blocking schemes and holes that's being hit. And, you know, if he could have went outside or inside or who got bounced or, you know, who really got it. You know, so at the quarterback position, and I'm not just saying that at that position, but, you know, we, not to give us too much credit, we just see everything that's going on both sides of the ball. We see everything. We study it on offense and defense. And this is Tom Brady showing and being a savant that he know what guys need to be placed, and then you call it the right way, and it results in Super Bowl victories, and that's what he's produced over the years.
Mike Vick, my friend, Mike, I'm going to text you my address. I need you to send me some autographed stuff, not for any reason other than I have to sell it to pay these gambling debts. Talk to you later, Mike. Thank you.
I was just about to say, yeah, no doubt.
Talk to you later, brother. See you. There's my buddy, Mike Vick. Joy Taylor with the very satisfied laugh at my behalf. Here she is with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News.
Your most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath inside a Casper mattress. 1,501 perforations create a cooling system so effective, you won't be awake to notice. Only on a Casper mattress, only at Casper.com. So an incident we haven't talked about all day today was with Tom Brady and Tyrann Mathieu. And they got into each other's faces last night, exchanging multiple jabs during the game. Immediately after the game, Brady reportedly texted Tyrann Mathieu to say he was sorry. He apologized for losing his composure and said his outburst in the heat of the moment did not reflect how he truly feels about him. Brady reportedly told him, Mathieu, that he was the ultimate competitor, an incredible leader, and a class act. He also expressed his desire to apologize again in person. Mathieu said his side of the altercation. He said in a since-deleted tweet that Brady started the verbal spat when he called Mathieu something I won't repeat. And he also said during his press conference, I never really saw that side of Tom Brady, to be honest, but whatever, no comment, it's over with. I don't get too reactionary to these situations. Now, I always think it's kind of strange to see a quarterback talking trash to a defensive player because it's like, this could go very badly for you very quickly. Now, obviously, they're not going to be talking trash to an offensive side of the player that's on the ball on the field at the same time. But I always feel like specifically a quarterback, it's kind of a dangerous space to be in. Tom Brady, ultimate competitor, also ultimate level of confidence. He's done this quite a few times before. Doesn't have the anxiety of what's going to happen if I talk trash in this moment. I think it just kind of got a little out of control with the reaction to it. Like, this is a heat of the moment kind of situation. I do like that Brady apologized right afterwards. Now, I don't know what Mathieu is referring to when he says he called him something he won't repeat.
I want to know what Tom said.
I think Tom felt
the need to apologize, write a note. Like, Tom might have got extra salty there. Do you know what this reminded me of, though, Joy? Something that might be near and dear to your heart because it involves the Steelers. In 2007, the undefeated season, the Steelers were playing the undefeated Patriots. And my old college buddy, a good friend of mine when I was at Syracuse, Anthony Smith, safety Anthony Smith, talked trash about Brady leading up to the game. I have no idea why Anthony did this. And they called a flea flicker and directed it right at Anthony. They gave up the touchdown, and Brady sprinted down the length of the field and got in his face. Yeah. I hadn't seen him do something like that. That was 15 years ago almost. Since then, that also helped drive my buddy Anthony Smith out of the league. Sorry, Anthony, he was so nice to me when we were at Syracuse. But you don't normally see this. That was a little Philip Riversy, the chirping and the yelling and the jawing. You don't always see that from Tom right in the face of the defender.
Yeah, no, that's a good incident to bring up because it's not completely an outlier for Tom Brady specifically to do. But right. You bring up Philip Rivers, who is very much known for not using naughty words. Tom Brady doesn't necessarily fall in that category. So I'm with you. I'm interested if you're going to say, and Tyrann Mathieu doesn't owe us anything, but I do feel like if you're going to put something out there, let you know, he said a word I'm not going to repeat, people are going to wonder what it is that Tom Brady said. Also, you guys were very angry at each other, so that we're assuming some, you know, inappropriate words.
And you did see, just, sorry to interrupt, just real quick before you get to the next story. You did see Brady on the sideline right after. And I'm not a professional lip reader, but I can pretend to be. It sure did seem like, and Romo laughed at it, that he said to his teammate, hey, bleep that guy. Like, he was still fired up about it. So I am curious what happened. What else do we have?
So Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston, as we know, but the organization is not ready to let him go. The Texans have no interest in trading Deshaun right now and want to repair the relationship instead. Some executives from other teams reportedly haven't had their calls and texts about Watson returned by the Texans, and those who have spoken with the organization say that Nick Caserio has been very firm that Watson is not available. This is my fear about the situation. It's going to get extremely ugly. That is what I'm afraid of, because Deshaun Watson doesn't deserve that, and that's all I'm really concerned about in this situation. I've not liked how the Texans have done business for a very long time now. I don't like when head coaches are also GMs. It's a whole nother job. The front office has done a disastrous job of putting together a staff at the front office level. And that goes up, obviously, to ownership. And they completely botched the relationship with Deshaun Watson by telling him, to Michael Vick's point a few minutes ago, that he was going to be involved in personnel decisions, which isn't a standard move for teams. But when you, the organization, the front office, the ownership, go out of your way
to
tell someone that they're going to be involved in it, and then you don't involve them,
it's
a disaster of a situation. I was actually like seeing some video of Jack Easterby like being circulated on the internet. So I don't know if you've seen any of this.
Did you make it through it? Did you make it through it?
No,
I couldn't make it through.
Yeah, I can't do awkward.
It's too uncomfortable.
No, I can't.
You're like, oh, no, stop.
Exactly the same. Yeah. I cannot tolerate awkward and uncomfortable because I and you're probably the same way. I'm a very direct person. So if things start to spiral, I'm like, okay, stop. Like, we need to address and, like, fix the situation. And I just wanted someone to stop him. And it just never stopped. And it just progressively got worse. So, yes, I did not get through the entire video. I was able to see the snippets of the worst of it. So that kept me from the obligation, I feel like, as a television personality to watch all of it.
As a journalist?
Yeah, I'm not a journalist. But yeah. I couldn't get through
Of joy being put in awkward situations. Once upon a time, this will be for the memoirs. Once upon a time, Joy Taylor, myself, and a third party were at a dinner. And I turned to the third party and I was like, real quick, before we get started, I just want you to know, I have no respect for you whatsoever. I don't like who you are or what you represent. Now I gotta go. And I went and smoked a cigarette and just left Joy sitting there with him. That's a true story that happened. The last point I'm gonna make about the Deshaun thing is, you saw this weekend, they fired the equipment manager.
Yeah.
Who evidently was like Deshaun's best buddy.
Yes.
It's like they're doing a football version of how to lose a guy in 10 days. How to alienate your franchise quarterback in 10 months. Trade away his favorite player. Lie to him. Make the team worse. Fire the equipment guy. It's like they're trying to force him out the door, Joy. It really is.
They're playing the opposite game. Do the opposite of what you're supposed to do. But yes, and to your point about that story, that is a true story. And the details of that story are in the vaults. For the book, because it's so much better than Nick is telling. But we're going to move on. So we spoke earlier about Aaron Rodgers winning the MVP and Justin Herbert taking home Offensive Rookie of the Year, but there were some other awards from the NFL honors on Saturday night. Derrick Henry won Offensive Player of the Year. Aaron Donald edged out T.J. Watt to take home his third Defensive Player of the Year. Chase Young, we mentioned earlier, Defensive Rookie of the Year. Alex Smith, Comeback Player of the Year. Kevin Stefanski, much-deserved Coach of the Year in his first season with the Browns. And Russell Wilson won the highly coveted Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. I didn't feel like there were any snubs in this situation. And I do like that Kevin Stefanski won Coach of the Year because there was a lot of great jobs done by the head coaches around the league this year. But I was really impressed with Kevin Stefanski coming into the Browns, who are a habitual dumpster fire, and establishing a culture, which I've always felt like the Browns needed first and foremost.
No, he was exceptional. To me, the big news I got from the NFL awards, because if you saw, Alex Smith got 49 votes for Comeback Player of the Year. Big Ben got one. So I found out Big Ben has an awards vote. I didn't know. I thought it was just journalists, but Big Ben evidently has an awards vote because... Who else voted for Big Ben? Alex Smith almost lost a leg.
Yeah, it's a
big... He almost lost a
it
leg.
It feels like that should
back.
Be unanimous, like, yeah.
It's a one guy, but it was Ben. I am... My sources... Hold on, who's that? Hold on. We have from the news desk. They're telling me I have no sources. I can't report that. All right, my gut's telling me Ben voted for himself. There is joy with the news.
Well,
all right,
that's
coming up next.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Now coming up next, sorry about that, a little off timing there, I was so excited. Save our best for last, I wanted to get to it right now. I give out some grades, including the first ever not applicable grade. We'll explain who that goes to next when I give out grades for the Super Bowl. Nick Wright in for Colin on The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It is Nick Wright in for Colin live on The Herd. Got to remind you real quick, Cremo Barber Shave Cream gives you a close, comfortable shave while fighting razor burn. Fight the burn! Cremo Barber Shave Cream is a rich, concentrated formula packed with slick molecules that blades will glide across your skin. Available at major retailers, Amazon, and at CremoCompany.com. That's CremoCompany.com. All right, we don't have a ton of time left, so it is time now for best for last. Joy Taylor is going to ask me players. I'm going to give grades, something like that. I give out a grade card, something like that. Joy, please take over. You know this better than me.
What grade are you going to give Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, boy. Got to be fair here. Gotta be totally unbiased.
Totally.
I'm gonna give Patrick Mahomes a B minus. Because I do not think there is another quarterback in the league who could have done better than he did last night. I truly, now maybe they would have scored a touchdown, the Chiefs didn't score a touchdown, but I don't think you can look at that game and be like, man, if the Chiefs had X, it would have gone better for them. And while the stat line is not B minus worthy, the stat line's more like D worthy, two of these throws that go down as incompletions are two of the greatest throws I've ever seen. The third and 11 early, that again, this play here, I know this sounds dumb, I don't care. If Tyreek makes this catch, I think the Chiefs might win the game. I think everything's different. I think the Chiefs are feeling good, the Bucs maybe changed game plan a little bit, and it hit him in the face mask, conked right off his head. And then the other one that hit a guy in the head, the game was over at this point, Darrell Williams. Fourth and nine, down 22, 13 minutes left. They had like a 3% chance. But that play is impossible. Look at him. He's horizontal to the field. Four defenders around him. Hits him in the face mask. So for all those things and the fact, Joy, I'm giving him a little extra credit. He had a C+, got bumped up to a B- for the way he's stuck in the pocket, down 22 with 4 minutes left. Just kept getting crushed and kept popping back up. So I give him a B-.
What grade are you giving Tom Brady?
Little worse than Mahomes. See, I'm kidding. I give Tom Brady an A-.
Okay.
I think Tom, I was kidding, Joy. I'm kidding, Joy. Joy's going to get all mad at me. No, A-. I thought Brady was very good. I do not think he was the driving force behind the Bucs' victory. I think that's Todd Bowles, and we'll get to them and the defense later. I also think he threw a pick that I'm not certain how defensive holding was called. The ball was thrown within 1.5 seconds, and they called that. It still bothers me, but neither here nor there. But A-, he got downgraded. He had an A, but our reporters on the ground say he used very dirty language to Tyrann Mathieu, and you're not supposed to taunt your opponent, so he gets downgraded a touch to an A-, the near pick, and that's all. He had, you know, 200 yards passing, but the best passer rating for a Super Bowl he's ever had for his career, so a solid A- for Tom Brady.
Andy Reid.
Oh, God. A D. I thought Reid struggled from the beginning and never got better. I thought that the Chiefs had... This is a good... I talk about how I'd love to be a GM one day. I never say I could be a coach. Clock management coordinator, maybe, but not a coach. But Andy Reid had my game plan, which was change nothing, throw all the time, dare him to stop you. And he never adjusted. But I'm not the coach. Like, don't go with my game plan. I just have ideas. And I thought the timeouts at the end of the first half was a massive moment. You have that long first half. You're down 14-6. The Bucs are trying to run out the clock. You can say, we're getting the ball back down a score. We've played terribly. We're down one score. And that he called back-to-back timeouts, which dared the Bucs to go down the field. That, to me, was huge. So he gets a D.
What is the grade for Bruce Arians?
Oh, he gets an A. I thought he was great. I thought he was, and I think that is a grade he's earned over the course of the year. And over the course of how he built that staff, he hired the best person available for every position, no matter other preconceived notions. He empowered Byron Leftwich. Todd Bowles is exceptional. I think Todd Bowles probably earned himself another head coaching job. Byron Leftwich, nobody will even give him a head coaching interview. And I think the way he, free of ego, empowered Tom Brady. I think the way he throughout the year said, listen, we're going to do this collaboratively, collectively. It doesn't have to be my way or the highway. Sorry to use the cliche. We're going to do this together, and I like it. Like, guess what? Teachers give you a better grade if they like you. I like Bruce. I like the way he carries himself. I like that he's a little different than most coaches, so I give him an A. That's an easy one.
What grade do you give Todd Bowles?
A+. Perfect score if you could do it. 100%. I thought it was... The only thing I could compare it to is Belichick, when he was the D coordinator for the Giants 30 years ago. In the first Super Bowl the Bills went to, that Bills team was the number one offense, dynamic, seemingly unstoppable, and they held them in the teens. And that was kind of Belichick's like claim to fame, was what he did coordinating that game plan. And Bowles did it without Lawrence Taylor. I mean, they have good players. They don't have Lawrence Taylor. So I give him an A+, a near perfect score for Todd Bowles.
What about the Chiefs' offensive line?
Oh, God. What's worse than an F?
Incomplete?
You kicked out of school. No. They get an F. No, an incomplete means you didn't do the work. You did the work, and you just failed at it. In fact, I would say I need you to repeat the grade, but I don't want to see you again. No. So they get an F. They're sorry, guys. I love you. You get an F.
All right. What grade are you giving the halftime show by The Weeknd?
Oh, non-applicable, incomplete. You're going to have to tell me, Joy.
I enjoyed it.
You know how much of the halftime show I... Okay, well then you give it a grade, because I didn't see a second of it.
Why didn't you see it?
Because I was circling my house, chain smoking, Black and Miles. Because I was stressed out, Joy. That's why. That's why.
People were very
critical. I wasn't ready to dance.
People were very critical of it, but I think you have to grade it on a curve because of COVID. Like, they couldn't do the, you know, normal crowd interaction that you have, like, down on the field and, you know, in the stands and stuff. So yeah. I thought he did a good job. It was fun. And I like the choreography.
Okay. Okay, good. I give it Joy's grade.
So I would give it a B+.
I was stressed out. I was walking around smoking a Black and Mild, and then one of my neighbors was walking a dog and just said to me, like, hey, how about that game? And I yelled at him. Yelled at my neighbor.
On.
I was like, can't talk right now. No, I was freaking out. Hey, the great Speak for Yourself is up next. Thank you, everybody. We'll be right back. Quick break.